Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Pop.
The views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
Or get politically correct. You are now listening to Political Bullshit. People discussing varying opinions about the same political bullshit.
Yo, we live, baby. Once again, Political Bullshit live, episode number 3. What's going on, world?
Nick, hey, what's up, bro? How you doing? Good to hear from you again.
Good, man. We got a special guest this week.
Yes, we do.
We got Niner Faithful from Niner Faithful Radio. We got Niner Faithful here. What's going on, brother? How you doing?
What's up? How y'all doing today, man? Good to talk to y'all. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good to talk to you too, man. Thanks for coming on.
We figured that there's a lot going on right now with the NFL. People are still talking about, Colin Kaepernick not being signed and issues surrounding that.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into that, I would like to try and get into maybe what you guys think, about protesting recently in a whole. Do you think it's been effective lately? I mean, when Trump was first elected, they were protesting for days, and then, I'm not sure what that really accomplished. What do you guys think?
You know, it's so funny because, I grew up in a very, I'm mixed. My father's black, my mother's white. So my mom's side of the family was, from the Midwest, all American type of town. My dad's family's from the South. So I was kind of raised, my grandparents weren't too like political, but I was raised, acknowledged of things and, hey, this is our history. This is the way things went down. So I was aware of it. And it's funny because I've talked to quite a few people about it, and I said, do you know why none of the protesting that happens nowadays doesn't accomplish anything? It doesn't. Like, for example, you mentioned the Trump protest. And I said, it doesn't because there's no action. And I said, so let's look at the Montgomery bus boycott. I said, now they marched and, we want our rights and all that, but why did it work? Because they hit them in their pocket. There was action. They're, hey, we're not riding the bus. We'll figure out other ways to do it. And so eventually it made change because the one thing that breaks down all barriers is money. So at the end of the day, it made change because there was action behind it. To me, I'm not necessarily saying that the way people are protesting or what they're protesting is wrong or right. What I'm saying is, okay, we get your message. That's why you want to picket it. You want to get your message out there. Now, what is your action? What are you going to do to make this change? And even though I've come out and I've fully supported Kaepernick's protest, and I have yet to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance or even listen to the Pledge of Allegiance or the national anthem, on any type of sporting event since. Is the fact is even then, that's one of the reasons why I supported his protest, because I felt there was action. He whether you disagree with it or agree with it, he had action. He put money where his mouth is. Okay, I'm going out here and I'm teaching the youth about their rights. And this is, hey, when you get pulled over by an officer, this is how you handle it. And I think that a lot of the protests nowadays don't have that.
Well, I would agree with what Kaepernick followed up with. After he did that, he followed up and he did do action. He donated millions of dollars. He went out and he did personally go out to camps and teach the youth. And I got to admit that I am one of those people. I did serve my country. I was in the Marine Corps. I don't appreciate that kind of thing. But I'm not one of those guys that thinks that he has to stand because he has a right not to. However, he is in the NFL, and under their dime, if they got a rules and they say you have to, then he has to. But as an American, as a citizen, nobody has to stand, and I wouldn't want it to be that way anyway, because then we're living in you know, a Marxist country or a fascist country or a dictatorship.
Yeah.
In Cuba, you got to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance or the national anthem.
In North Korea,
you have to stand.
Go ahead, sir. Yeah, exactly. That was an argument people were throwing at me, and I heard thrown back a lot was, hey, look, if you want to go to a country that, you know, demands that you stand for the flag or all that, go to North Korea, bro. And first of all, I want to say thank you for your service. You know, I come from my grandfather was in the military. He was in Korea. My stepfather was in Gulf War. My granduncle was in Vietnam. I have friends that served in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that's the one opinion, and I kind of like that we have different opinions here, because that's the one thing I at least respect, is that people say, hey, look, you know what, I may not exactly agree with what he's doing, but I agree with his right to be able to do it. And I think that's the number one thing that people have not, you know, gotten in this, is that, look, I think it's almost in our political correct world, We're thought that if somebody disagrees with you, you can't be cool with them. Or like I used this reference. I went in to one of my friend's podcasts. He does a little political show as well. And I went into his podcast and I said, you know, very few people know that Malcolm X sat down with the leader of the Ku Klux Klan and they had a meeting. And a lot of people, you know, people were like, what? Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, just because two people have different views, and, you know, obviously could be two different people, doesn't mean that they can't come to some type of coexistence. And I think that's something that's missing in our scene, is that, hey, you could be Republican, I could be Democrat, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be right or I have to be wrong. And I think people with this political correctness and not wanting to offend anybody have lost that. And, hey, look, that's one of the things that makes our country the greatest country in the world, is the fact is that we can say and theoretically do pretty much whatever we want. And that's just our God-given right by being a citizen. And I think that's what was, you know,
I agree with you, but going back to our original point, talking about, you know, the protests and the action needs to be there, right? And I think that now people are just they're picketing and they're protesting for just to picket and protest. It doesn't feel like when, you know, the day after Trump was elected and there was a bunch of protests in Washington, D.C., I didn't feel like anybody was cohesive. It was almost like people were against each other in protest. And I feel now, especially with our social climate, you know, talking about the social justice warriors and safe spaces and this and that, and that it's no longer protesting is more a look at me than trying to fix a problem. And I think things like this, like us just talking about this, definitely brings up a great it's good because we're actually speaking about things. How many people do you see, like, you know, Milo went to Berkeley to try and speak, Ben Shapiro, Ann Coulter, granted these are very right-wing guys, but they all went to go speak at Berkeley. And there was riots at Milo. They didn't allow Ann Coulter, and Ben Shapiro had to go back at a later date after he made a big stink about not being able to speak there. The problem is there's no forum. There's no conversating back and forth. And there absolutely needs to be a conversation, because like you said, Niner, if you don't agree with something that I say or I don't agree with something that you say, as long as we can talk about it, we're making progress, and we need to make progress. Being in a safe space and not liking someone's opinion and taking it as an attack on a whole as you or a whole group and the identity politics that we have nowadays, it doesn't fucking work. We need to talk back and forth. The only way we can fix things is if we speak back and forth and have a forum and have conversations about the social climate, like Colin Kaepernick standing for protesting, like Donald Trump being president, like Black Lives Matter. It doesn't matter any group of people or any type of protest. We need to speak out and talk to each other calmly. Just like you said, if Malcolm X can speak to the leader of the Ku Klux Klan, then me, Niner Faithful, and our boy Pete here can all have a conversation and be civil about it and still shit on each other because we like each other. That's why.
Well, I hope that this isn't the same thing as Malcolm X speaking to the Ku Klux Klan, though.
Well, yeah, of course. I don't think
this is not the analogy,
sure,
right? Because I'm like totally not
climate.
All right, so I went a little dramatic. It was a little dramatic.
Because, bro, because here's the thing I don't like, and here's another point I wanted to bring up, right? Like, it's like the lines, bro. It's like you're on this side of the line or that side of the line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything about me is pretty much Democrat, dude, except a few things. I'm 100% aware that the prison system, it definitely has a bias, and there's definitely racial bias and sexist bias, and not favor toward women, mm-hmm. favor toward men. Sexist toward men,
oh, yeah.
not women. With custody, child support, and incarceration mm-hmm. rates. If you're a man, you're screwed with the prison system.
Who are you telling? You're talking to a man who's $2,500 in the debt and child support, and the sad part about it is it's not even going to my baby mama. It goes to welfare.
Exactly.
Don't get me started on the bias. She literally gets paid by the government to sit on her ass.
And then you got to pay them, not her, mm-hmm. and they'll mm-hmm. put you in jail for it. And then they, I'm all about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, so a lot of this stuff, it has to change, you know. And I'm definitely economically. I know there needs to be changes. The poverty rate is increasing. Shit, there's not good jobs. Back in the 40s, dude, if you lived in the city, you pretty mm-hmm. much joined a union. There was unions everywhere. You went, you joined a union, you had a good job. In 40s, 50s, 60s, it's just how it was. Try to join a union these days.
Yeah, I
try to find one.
The climate in Philadelphia and other places.
Get me in.
In San Jose, it was a lot different because we were a farming community and everything. But, yeah, I mean, I totally understand. Everything's different. My grandfather, pretty much straight from graduating high school, was able to walk into the Ford plant and get a job in Detroit.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, straight from pretty much, I think that what? I'm pretty sure my grandfather started to work there maybe a couple months. I think he might have took a trip or something, high school graduation trip. But, yeah, pretty much straight out of high school was able to walk in and get a job at Ford Motor Company and work there
exactly.
for like 40 years. You know, try
exactly.
doing that nowadays.
No, they don't protect workers' rights.
Hey, listen, we got
to
call.
Talk about
let's bring them in. We got to call. Let's bring them in here.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, man, who we bullshitting with?
Oh, what's up, man? This is Nas.
Nas!
What's up, buddy?
Man, how y'all doing?
We're doing good,
right,
man.
Hey, is America great again yet?
No, not quite. Well, it's not bad. It's not too bad. All right, let's not say it has its issues, but it's pretty damn good compared to a lot of places. But, you know, we still want to move forward, right? That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, that wasn't the promise that was made, but okay.
That's
hey,
exactly
yeah,
right.
Months,
that's not the promise
break.
That was made.
It's funny because I like to use the words a lot is that, you know, I mean, I do think we live in a great country, but I said I don't think it's so much that we're great. I think it's just everywhere else is shittier. and I hope people are understanding exactly what I'm meaning by that. Like I like to say, I live in California, so you know a lot of people from the East Coast, you know, working with a lot of East Coast, you know, are every day is summer and everything like that, and you know all that type of stuff. I'm like, it's not so much that the weather's so great here and it's 80 degrees every day and you never have to wear a jacket or anything. It's just where y'all live, it's -32. You see what I'm saying?
That's,
so when it's 46 degrees here, -32, 46 degrees looks a lot better than -32.
Listen,
that's why I like to say it. In California, it's not so expensive because it's so great. It's just everywhere else is shittier.
Listen, if you live in California, in my opinion, you're probably a little soft because you're too used to that cushy weather, man. You need a little reality check, a little bitter winter, a little brutal summer. The humidity like we get over here, man, it keeps you in check. That's why all those stars and all those people in Hollywood are so fucking crazy. It's because they're too used to good goddamn weather all the time.
Hey, you know what? Actually, it got pretty humid today. It got pretty humid today, and I'll admit that, you know, I've pretty much lived in California my whole life, but I know what's up about humidity. My grandparents lived in Florida, so.
Hey, man, to hell with that, dude. I'm from the Midwest. I moved out of there down to Atlanta. Man, ain't no honor in shoveling your car out in the wintertime and all that nonsense. The hell with that. I ain't dealing with that no more. Ever again. I made a vow and got the hell on, man. No cold weather.
Hey, it's funny that you mentioned that because my grandpa used to say that everybody wants a white Christmas until you're up at 7 a.m. shoveling snow.
Yeah, man.
The snowstorms over here in Jersey get a little rough sometimes, but it's never like that.
Oh, that's where my girl's from.
Midwest.
Randolph? I believe the city she's from is Randolph, I believe.
I don't know. We're from South Jersey and North Jersey, completely different. Almost like it's almost like the Mason-Dixon line just completely divided our state.
And I understand because a lot of people, it's funny because I'm first-generation Californian. And a lot of my family think it's 80 degrees and all everybody does is surf. And I was like, look, what you got to understand is a lot of the image that's portrayed of California is Southern California. Southern California is where it's 80 degrees and you never got to wear a jacket and they're barbecuing during Christmas. I said, where I'm from in Northern California, I said, best believe, bro, when you go to Frisco or you got that bay breeze coming over, I'm not saying that it's, negative 32 degrees, but it ain't sunshine and surfboards. Let me put it to you that way. Go swimming in Santa Cruz water and then tell me that it's warm and 80 degrees.
So, Nas, what's your thought, man? What were you thinking? What's bothering you this week?
I can't really say anything's bothering me. I'm just seeing things go as they are. Some things I got right, some things I got wrong, but I'm just amazed at the resiliency of some of his supporters right now. It's like, dude, you can't see that this is hope and change all over again, wrapped up in a different package. A guy sold you a dream. He's not fulfilling his side of that dream he sold you, and he's trying to pacify you with rhetoric. So the same way that Obama would rally the troops every couple of months because things weren't going as they were said to be, that's what I see from this guy, and I feel like people are falling for it. So, we're crazy.
So
I think people have fell for it is the issue. And I think that people felt so hopeless and so lost socially, specifically speaking about white people. They kind of felt like they needed somebody for some reason. And I think that they thought that this guy, Donald Trump, was going to be the answer for them. And I don't know. I mean, it's obviously, as of this point right now, he's doing more harm than good. But in my mind, the push and the pull of politics, the ebb and the flow, are kind of – he's trying to pass things that aren't working, right? So if we can maybe live out these 4 years with the push and the pull, if he doesn't get impeached by then because of collusion with Russia, which is a whole other story for possibly a whole other day, you know what's going to happen is we're going to be – in 4 years from now, left with a candidate that may be a million times better than we could have had before with Hillary or with Trump. You see what I'm saying? Maybe in 4 years from now, this is the awakening that people need to actually bring in a viable candidate.
Yeah, but the question becomes at what cost? Because the people who voted for him are a part of the vulnerable people who are being attacked policy-wise and being hit in ways that they don't even see right now, but they're actually going to be paying a lot for going forward. When you talk about the social safety net, you talk about the things that government used to be responsible for that are now being privatized, and you talk about the people in that administration who he put in place where he called draining the swamp when it looks like, well, just new swamp monsters. Instead of middlemen, now they're directly in charge. So, that's becoming an issue. So, like I said, I look at this the same way I spent those lonely Thanksgivings when black folks and the family was mad at me for talking about Barack. Some of y'all folks in the white community going to have that, some of these tough talks with y'all family members, man.
Actually,
y'all going to have to do it, too.
It's funny. I actually wanted to get your thought real quick is, because you happened to mention that black folks were mad at you because you came and spoke out at Obama. So do you feel that that Obama really didn't do shit for black people? Because actually, personally, that's how I feel.
No, he was a centrist Democrat. Like, the plan was never to do things for black people. He was a centrist Democrat. He did what they do. Goldman, best friends with him. You know, Wall Street, that's who he loves. So he mm-hmm. did what he did what Hillary would do. He's probably not as much of a warmonger as her, but as far as policy-wise, that was to be expected. Now, when you talk to working-class black folks and you start to explain the issues of things he wouldn't fight for, then people start to kind of wake up, and some of them wouldn't get upset with you. But I'm seeing that same phenomenon with Trump, to where he'll do this. He'll do something that's really just symbolic. There's really not a policy or anything. It'll just be to rally the troops, and I'll see people online just react to it like, yeah, see, this is why we got him in there. And it's like, you don't see that that's nothing there? It's just a rallying cry? So
yes,
make America great again, hope and change.
Well, I got a question. I'd like to – what his platform stands for, what he keeps saying to me, is what I keep hearing is the people that you elect – to run the government are bad. Let's override them, even though you elected them, and let's just have rich people run the country. Like, in essence, that's kind of what I hear from him. And it's I'm not saying he's trying to say, you know, we should not have a government, but he talks so bad about the elected government that it's like, well what's the other solution besides an elected government? People we don't elect? Who are powerful? I don't think so. I'd rather have elected officials. I'd rather have someone I can say, I don't like this guy. He sucks. He's out. Not, oh, shit, he's rich as fuck. There's nothing I could do. I'm fucked forever. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want to be able to vote him out, you know? So it's, and we're having this animosity, this campaign against our elected government. And I think that's to me, that's suspect. Why would you have so much animosity toward an elected government?
That you're
a
part
of,
by being the president.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's any conspiracies about that.
For democracy, in the sense of, you know, the health care bill first didn't go through, and, you know, he blamed Republicans. It goes through with John McCain's vote, if I remember this correctly. But then it was knocked down again during the skinny repeal when McCain flipped shit and went the other direction. Now this guy is tweeting out saying, oh, hey, I'm just going to let this implode like it should, blah, blah, blah. But if democracy speaks to a point where it's like, okay, we don't want this. We don't want this specific type of healthcare. Then why is he, instead of saying let it implode, which is going to hurt 30 million people in the U.S., why doesn't he try to find a viable solution? It's almost like he's undermining democracy in a sense. And it bothers me.
Yeah,
because
that's
on one...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Noss.
No, I was just going to say that's the thing. They never actually had a plan, because the problem was Obamacare came from the Heritage Foundation. This was a right-wing bill that was put up basically back in the day to stop Hillary Care. So they don't really have any ideas outside of figuring out how to keep a market-based system but get rid of the individual mandate but find to pay for it. Because, you know, everybody hates the mandate, but it's like, okay, well, what are you going to do to pay for this? And nobody can come up with anything besides, well, we'll just go to the other side and give wealthy people a tax break on this. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not paying for it. That's actually making it even more dependent on government subsidies to keep this thing sustainable. And then you have a party that ran for 7 years on repealing this. When the guy gets in office, of course, the insurance companies look at that as, okay, the market might change tomorrow. So they're worried about, okay, what's going to happen in the government? And you keep promising to repeal and you don't do it. Yeah, you're causing calamities throughout the markets, and then you turn around and say the markets are failing. So, you know, it's –
Exactly. And what does insurance thrive on? The only reason why insurance works is because everybody pays into the insurance. That's how it works. So if you can make it so you scare these marketplaces into jacking premiums up because you say you're going to let it implode or whatever, I'm not completely 100% sure on the semantics of the whole situation, but you need people to pay into insurance. As soon as you stop, say Trump says, okay, well, instead, if you do needed to keep the insurance going through the marketplaces, because they're offering it at a discounted rate to begin with. So since they're offering it at a discounted rate, what Obama did was said, hey, okay, I'll give you this federal, I'll give you federal funding so you can make it cheap enough for people to buy. Well, if you stop giving those people, if you stop giving the insurance money, the money from the government funding, then they're not going to have any money to keep the insurance going, and once you can't have money in insurance, and there's no more insurance. So it's really fucking everybody. And he's not thinking, like you said, Nas, he doesn't have, there was no plan. They kept everything under wraps. Typically, they have meetings before Senate hearings and this, that, and the other. He had none of that. And they did none of that because there wasn't a real plan. They voted on the skinny repeal at fucking 2 o'clock in the morning because they wanted to keep everything under wraps. Like, they had this big plan, but they didn't have shit. They had no fucking plan.
Yeah, man. This is what happened when you have uncertainty in the market. And John McCain, that may have been his revenge, his best served cold for some of the things Trump has said about him over the years or over the past year. And then I think he's an old school guy, so he probably didn't like the idea of them coming up with a new way to kind of wrangle this bill out. You know, traditionalists typically
yes.
don't like radical new ideas. So that might have been why he did what he did. But no matter what, he didn't have a fix.
No, there was no mm-hmm. fix. And you're right, Nas. I read an article, and what John McCain said after the fact was, this had nothing to do with me having second thoughts. It has everything to do with, I don't like the way that the House and the Senate are going about things. They need to go back to how it used to be. No backdooring, no under wraps type of thing. And that's the reason why he didn't vote for it. Which blows my mind, because having brain cancer, I would think, hey, this would directly affect me. But I guess he's just too much of a man. Is that what it is? He's too American?
Yeah, a little ego in there, because he wanted that dramatic moment to where he got to be the hero who saved the day and, you know, all of that. Just the way he did it, there was a lot of display on right there. So, I mean, you know, you got to throw that in. But, look, man, no matter what, insurance, think of it like car insurance. If you got a city full of 16-year-olds, you think Geico's going to want to go to that city and give car insurance to those kids? Hell no. So just think about insurance in that way. So the moment you have a lot of people with, you know, previous conditions or they're high-risk people, insurance people don't want to insure them because you're probably going to lose out on that whole little contract. But if you got a bunch of healthy people, those are the people you want to sign up. You'll continue to make money from them and probably not have to pay out anything. So the insurance companies need to be subsidized to a certain degree if we're going to have a market system. How much and where does it come from? I think those are the real only honest conversations. Everything else is Dems and Repubs just yelling at each other. But they both get paid from it. So what is it?
They're yelling and no one's talking. And that's the point we were making earlier. I was making earlier is that we just need to actually talk about things. And it's really, I think, it's the bipartisan part. You know, it's the two-party system that we have now. That's, we need to elect somebody else in a different party, somebody who's not affiliated with the two. Maybe someone who's directly in the middle. Maybe an independent. I mean,
well, you can't have three. You got to have four. It's got to be an even number because three is going to take away from one side. You're going to need two centrist candidates, center left, center right, and then further left, further right. You got to make sure that whatever new you need, we're going to need two extreme left and rights to go beyond what we have today, and that's what you'd have to have, because if you did it any other way, it would just take away from one party, and then that party would just end up splitting, and we'd be back to two parties again eventually. So you'd need four.
Can I get in again? I know I'm talking a lot,
but then you're just getting like a Trudeau. Because that's how Trudeau got elected. He's very extreme left. He got elected with 35% vote
because
they have a four-party system. So you risk that too, which he's not real bad, but he's not – I don't know if I'd care for a lot of his policies here, personally.
Yeah, Obama 2.0, nothing real different about him, neoliberal policy, don't expect much. But here, like, the thing is, we're not set up for a two-party system. There's nothing in the Constitution or anywhere that says we have to have a two-party system. We have two parties who overran the political process, and they create the benchmarks for other people to be involved. So that way, you got to get X amount of signatures. You got to raise X amount of money. And then they can keep setting those benchmarks higher and higher, making it harder for the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, or whoever you really, you know, would like to support. They make it harder and harder for them to get on the ballot based on them having control of, you know, the whole process. And that's the issue, them being able to control that process and make sure that they're the only two players in the game. And I agree with you. We need four or five, hell, as many viable parties as we can, because the political spectrum is nowhere near as narrow as just left or right, just conservative live. Like,
no,
it's not that.
No, not at all. Nas, as always, brother, we do appreciate your call, man. Have a good night.
All right, thank you.
Y'all be
That was a lot to take in.
Well, it's so
that
crazy.
That dude's got info on the fly. He calls, you don't even know what we're going to talk about. And he's got it. right off the top of his head.
No, man, we love you on here, man. Anytime you want to call, just give us a call. And just to let everybody know, that number is 646-668-8467. Give us a call. Tell us what you're thinking. Obviously, we tried coming in here talking about Kaepernick, and we completely took a left turn down the rabbit hole, which I'm fine with. So if you guys have any kind of topics you want to bring up, anything in the social media, see every current events, give us a call, 646-668-8467, and let us know what you think. We want to bullshit with you. That's what this is about. We're just a bunch of, losers on mic that we talk about stuff. So, hold on 1 second. And we have a call right here. Hey, what's going on? Who are we bullshitting with?
What kind of backdoor fucking bullshit do I got to go through to get on my own goddamn show?
Everyone, this is Tom. This is Tom. He is typically on the show with us on the podcast, but he has yet to make a radio appearance because he's too busy being famous, I think. I think he actually forgot about us. And after his birthday and everything, I tried to give him a break, but, God, I tried to get him on today.
Yeah.
And he said he was going to sleep in a little too long.
Yeah, you know, it's tough over here. I'm up all day, you know, I got to run these child slave labor camps over here in Asia. And someone's got to make your shoes.
And it's not you.
Actually, Nick, they've been working on your size 15 shoe for your giant fucking feet for like 3 months. You got a new shoe coming out.
I got news
for
you. You got
typical,
to remake them.
Tom is a typical extreme leftist. Bitches about the economy, then moves to Asia to start his company so he has cheap labor. And this is a true story. No, we're not bullshitting. This dude moved to Asia, and he pays pennies now for his music industry.
Hey, you know what? I'm self-employed, so
you
can
fuck
my dick.
I will not.
I could.
I'll fuck you up,
no,
though.
You know what?
That's
just, no, here's what it is. I believe so much in going against your immigration reform that I say, you know what, fuck that. I'll outsource all I want. Trump doesn't want to outsource shit to China. I'll outsource myself. That's what I did.
Well, we're glad because you're not in the U.S. giving us a bad name. So it's all good, man.
Exactly. Yeah,
and by the way, I wear
a
size 16. We get those kids to make a larger shoe for me.
Oh, Jesus Christ. If you don't prove the evolutionary theory, I don't know what does.
That's right, man. I'm like a tan Viking. But
yeah,
so what's
man,
going on?
I liked some of the stuff that he was saying, but I think what Nas was saying about like the two-party system, it has to be two parties because the American mind, it's not fostered enough in its growth to handle anything that's not split in two. We like simple decisions, hot, cold, black, white. You know, left, right, everything is just split into down the middle. So I don't think that, and I think that that's proven with the Libertarian Party, because even people who say that they, you know, vote Libertarian or vote Green Party or anything like that, they seldom actually understand what the hell it means, which, Nick, I know you agree with based on all the memes that you share, shitting on them constantly.
They do. And the thing, as long as I could have vote, I've voted Libertarian, because I feel like their ideals are the closest to mine. But the problem is they're a little crazy when it comes to I like the free market, but like I don't like the free market as much as libertarians love the free market. Like I think in a true libertarian's mind, they're gonna live on like a self-sustaining farm. Never have to see a doctor, never need money to see a doctor, and they want to barter pigs and shit like that. And like, I think there
needs
to be
Jim Jones is a libertarian.
Right, and he'd be great, right? Everybody in the pit. So,
yeah.
You know,
no offense to libertarians. I love you guys. But that dude was definitely a libertarian.
Well, libertarians don't believe that employees should have to wash their hands before returning to work. That's the kind of freedom.
You can't be that extreme, right? Like, there's exactly. It doesn't work for any parties. You can't be that extreme. You have to try and but I don't think that always connects with what they really feel. Like, I said I'm a libertarian, but I'm also super centrist in that I have ideas that take the ideals from both parties all the time. Like, I'm in a union. Libertarians would hate a union because it impedes the free market, and typically Republicans aren't into the unions as well. Meanwhile, Democrats love the unions, but I love guns. So it's like, oh, Democrats typically don't like guns. So, like, where am I really at?
I think that's
I like guns.
What that's called is being a person who has interests. I mean, that's almost kind of the point where I was getting is where, you know, it's okay to, for example, you know, I'm live in the Bay Area, but I have conservative views, but I also believe that everybody should be able to do what the fuck they want. It's like weird. Like, for example, a big thing around here was gay marriage, right? Now, to me,
yeah.
The thing I've always felt about that is like, look, bro, it's up to God. I got my own sins to take care of. You feel me?
Yes.
But the way I've always put about it is, but if you're going to teach, like, for example, I remember when Michael Sam was getting drafted in the NFL and it showed his boyfriend getting kissed, right? Him kissing his boyfriend. I said, now what if my 7-year-old is in the room with me? Now all of a sudden my 7-year-old looks at me and says, Daddy, why is that man kissing that man? Now I got to have a conversation with my 7-year-old that I wasn't ready to have. You see what I'm saying?
But grow up. But grow up. Who cares? Like,
yeah,
in
the
world
fuck
where
cares?
You can,
I wish he blew him in the fucking
matter.
NFL.
Like, in my opinion, in my opinion, Niner, it's like
blew him in the middle of ESPN.
Like, it doesn't matter to me. If my son were to see it on TV, then I say, hey, why does it matter to me? Because what if my son is that way? What if my son ends up being gay? Like, I don't care. You love gay. Essentially, you love who you love. You can't really help that type of thing. I mean, they showed it, and they possibly.
If he hangs
out
with them enough, he might be.
Now, listen, though, but the NFL shows that type of thing because it drives ratings, and the ratings drive the money.
Oh,
so I can
of
see
course.
Where that's wrong, but I don't care. But
I don't
see that as an issue. I'll explain that to my son. I mean, other people have different views, though.
Maybe that was a bad
If you don't want to do that, that's fine.
But I mean, yeah, the NFL is a ratings machine, and this is why another thing, kind of getting on the Kaepernick thing, is where I think the league becomes hypocritical is because I think it's all about reactionary. And when I say reactionary, you notice how, for example, Ben Roethlisberger, right? You know, in all his rape
yes.
cases and everything like that he sure as hell going to start for Pittsburgh, right?
That's true.
You know, and why is that? Why is it? Because, yeah, you know, the anti-rape cases, and, yeah, he got some shit for that, but you notice how it kind of slowly but surely kind of died down. And now I bet you if you walk up to most people, they wouldn't even remember, right? But the fact is why is the league this is my whole thing, is being a diehard Niner fan. I went to 4 games last year. I was there the Arizona game, which is I call the We Want Cap game. Because that was the loudest chant that I heard out throughout that whole stadium. I looked at my friend that I took and I said, hey, are they saying what the hell I think they're saying? And like then you could obviously hear that everybody was, we want cap, we want cap. Now, how the hell is Blaine Gabbert signed in Arizona but cap's not? And it's because what Jim Moore came out and said that I think is very telling. Is Jim Moore basically came out and said, look, this shit's going to hit me in my pockets, and I ain't going to dig that from no player. Now, my whole thing about it is, could you make the argument that I think personally, me as a Niner fan, I think he was a one-trick pony that got figured out. And I think once he got figured out, then that's when he needed to make the progression in his career that most quarterbacks make, which is to be a drop back, read from the pocket, you know, progression type of quarterback, and he's just not that type of player. So are there some legit reasons not to bring him out? Like Kyle Shanahan came out and said, look, I'm not changing my whole entire offense for a player that I think is going to be our backup quarterback. It's basically what he came out and said.
Which
but,
I understand.
You know, when Seattle comes out, when Seattle came out and tries it, and then you have Jim Harbaugh, or I'm sorry, John Harbaugh, coming out this week saying, hey, we would sign Kaepernick, we would sign Kaepernick. And, oh, yeah, you have all these people, oh, yeah, we think he's going to be in the league, and he'll get signed, and the quarterback. Well, all these teams that keep on saying they have no problem, why haven't you? If it's not a black hole, if it's not a protest related, it's a strictly football decision, and you can't tell me that Kaepernick, there's 64 quarterbacks better than Kaepernick.
I think it's the league that don't want him because a lot of you got to remember the NFL has a liberal base. It has a base that's like that, but its main base is very, very American, patriotic, conservative base.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they literally protested watching the San Francisco 49ers. And I think the NFL said, look, it'd be one thing if this guy was a, you know, starting string player, but he's not, and we're losing money. There is no point to have this guy. None. I mean, I applaud him for what he's doing. He's making a statement. That's a good thing. He's raising awareness, but this is not the place to do it. And any team that takes him, we're going to cut your salary. I guarantee that's what happened. The NFL did that. And that's why no one's taking it.
And I think I'm not going to sit here and argue and say that that's not what happened. I fully agree that. Was it strictly racism? Did I think that, you know, all the league owners got together and said, let's lynch him? No, I'm not going to sit there and say it. Was that a little bit of it? I'll put it to you this way. I always tell people, I remember going to my girlfriend. I was like, do you really think Donald Sterling is the only racist owner in the NBA? Hell no.
But I don't think he was racist.
He was the only dumbass that got cut.
In a majority black league, he told his girlfriend to go fuck a black dude. Like, that's the best thing or the best situation that could have happened.
But yeah.
How's that racist? He told his girl to go fuck black dudes. How's that racist?
But, you know, I think...
Well, I think he meant it in a condescending way, so that's...
Yeah, and he said, don't bring it to my game, things like that. But is he the only racist NBA owner? Hell no. You know what I'm saying? He was just a dumbass that got caught. You know what I'm saying? I bet you 90% of these owners and all the things that, you know, they're coming out, for example, domestic violence is a big hot-button issue, right? I bet you 90% of these NFL owners beat their wives. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that I could say that as a fact, or maybe 90% is a lot, but it's very political and it's very money-wise. But the thing that I argue is that the thing that I'm not arguing is why he's not necessarily signed to a contract. I can understand that. The thing that I argue is that why was there the backlash of it? And why does the – because the thing is going to Niner games and talking to fans from, you know, different teams that would come in and even Niner fans, you know. And I would say, you know, a lot of things that I could say is he's an NFL starting quarterback making, you know, X amount of millions of dollars. How the hell does he know about oppression? And the thing about it is the whole anti-police thing and the pig socks and everything like that. And I can understand why –
Yeah, the pig socks were stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I can
now you're
understand
disrespecting.
Why that would turn some people off. Yeah, that was ridiculous. That was immature. That was childish. I'll admit that. Okay, that's fine. But to me, is I remember I was in downtown San Jose, and I grew up in a city where compared to the black population, compared to where our city is, bro, we're like 2% of the city. San Jose barely has any black people in it. But I remember I was watching this little boy crying in the street. And this cop and his mom pointed to the cop, and his mom did what my mom used to do and be like, hey, you want the cop to take you to jail? You need to knock it off. And the cop walked over and said, hey, you want me to take you to jail? You need to, you know. And I looked at the cop, and I said, you want to know something funny, bro? And I said, when he grows up and he's 17 years old and he hates the cops, you're going to wonder why. And I said, maybe it's because of the portraying that you're giving him. I said, like me, I grew up in the poorest area of San Jose. So anytime I saw cops, it meant somebody I loved went to jail. So why do I probably, you know, and it was some dick shit that happened. So generally, what I'm saying is, you know, Kaepernick is, and like I said, I had some friends that have known him and stuff like that. And, you know, with the whole cop thing, what you got to understand is, you know, when you're in middle America, which let's put it this way, most people that watch NFL, like you said, are conservative, pro-America, middle America, you know, picket white fence, all that. That's fine. Y'all might love the police.
Well,
there.
I would say we're all pro-American. Everyone's pro-American, but they're pro patriotism,
don't symbolism,
like
the flag and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the problem is that the portrayal of the police, you know, and the image of the police officer, and you know, the fact that these issues with police brutality in the black or let's just say minority, okay, fine, let's just say minority neighborhoods, it's not like something that happened last year. You know what I'm saying? I remember this shit when I was growing up. I remember watching the Rodney King riots, and, you know, I remember, you know, my dad getting pulled over and things happened to my dad and finding out about family members. And so regardless of whatever you feel about the situation – and whether, you know, these – like the Alton Smelter and the Eric Gardner one were the two that got me. Because the thing I got is if I walked up to either one of y'all and I started choking y'all out and you started yelling, I can't breathe, and I continued to choke you out, I'd be in prison right now for murder. Can we regardless of my skin color, anything like that, if either three one of us, normal, regular people – did that to somebody, we would be in prison for murder.
Now, how
and
come,
that man?
Here's my question.
And that
how
man
come
is
my experience with police. How come my experience with police is so much better? Is it because I'm white, or is it because of the area I live in?
I think it has to do with maybe. I don't think it has to do with white, and because this is what I think is happening is now I'm coming from an area that's very diverse. I mean, you could grow up and your neighbor could be Mexican, your next door neighbor could be from Russia, you're across. I grew up in a very – the Bay Area is very diverse, so I don't grow in a very, you know, type of white-black type of city. You know, it's not like that here. So what I think it is, I think it has to do with your area. I think it maybe has to do with your upbringing. And when I say your upbringing, I say things like I grew up around an alcoholic stepfather. You know, I grew up around a lot of drug addicts, things like that. So that's probably going to make me interact with the police a lot more and probably in a negative persona. Like, I remember my baby mom called the cops on me one time, and I remember the cop happened to grab my daughter to bring my daughter out to see me, right? And she's crying, and Daddy, you're going to jail. And I'm like, Princess, I'm not going to jail. Calm down. Daddy's not going to jail. And she's sitting there crying and freaking out and everything like that. And I think that I'm not saying that those type of things didn't happen to you, but if they don't happen to you, that probably, you know, if the policeman comes in here and takes the bad guy that broke into your house away, he's probably a hero. If he comes into your house, kicks down your door, and grabs your dad and throws him in the back of a cop car, he's probably some bad guy. And I'm not saying that cops can't do that, and I understand that's part of being a cop and things like that, but as a kid, that's hard to understand. And so I think what people need to do is, whether you believe Kaepernick went about it the wrong way or the right way, we have to acknowledge as a country that police officers and minorities, there's issues there. And, you know,
well, statistically,
more whites are
killed by police officers than blacks or minority groups.
True. But the fact is that the fact is, if you look at our percentage of population, it's just like there's more whites incarcerated than blacks. Theoretically, there are more white people incarcerated than blacks.
You got to go by percentage.
You got to go by the percentages of the population.
Well, then if there's more white people that are getting murdered by cops, and there's more white people majority in the U.S., then that's proportional, is it not?
No, because
it's
not, because the percentage, 12% of the population is disproportionately a lot more than 64%. But there's other issues,
too.
Well,
you also have to look at economics in that, too. It's really hard to staple a statistic, a black and white statistic to that because of economics coming into play as well.
Exactly.
You know, there's still,
and you know what I think
there's
really
still economic
me?
Situations that affect the blacks from slavery years. And, Nick, I know you hate when I say that, but there's still economic situations that exist because of that as backlash to that.
Well,
so
that creates more
urban crime rates.
Well, Tom, real quick, I'd like to make a statistic, too, that backs that. Okay, if you look at the 1%, and I'm not talking about Walmart and all these guys. I'm not talking about the 0.1%. I'm talking about the 1%, which are these store owners and these people that end up being millionaires. And they make $1 million, right? They're in the 1%. Right? These are the people that are all around us who ultimately fund your local economy. If you live in a good neighborhood, it's because you live in an economy. You live in a neighborhood with people who have $1 million. They make six figures. They make this amount of money, right? If you look at that pie graph, 96% of that is white. 96% of that is white.
And I'm going to give you exactly the reason why that happened. Okay, so this is an interesting.
And that's a reality.
What I think is why we can't make it so much a racial issue now is the fact that
bro, you get arrested right now?
Is, no, that wasn't me.
All right. Sorry.
So I know, right? What I think happened
you get a
is,
siren?
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
I started
Asian
getting a little
soul.
Paranoid. Like, what happened is when. When desegregation happens, okay, so when desegregation happens, you now took poor blacks and poor whites and you put them together. You took rich whites and you put rich blacks together, and you know, things became disproportionable. What happened is, so traditionally, if we go back to the family business, so if we look at the fact that you generally are what your family is, i.e., if your parents graduated college, you're more likely to graduate college yourself. So what happened is if you look at the real way to get rich in America, it's never to go work for somebody else. It's to open your own business. That is the number one best way to get rich in America. And so what happened is when you desegregated America, black people now had an amazing ability to go spend their money at white businesses. And so the fact is what people don't realize is that blacks, in theory, were doing better during segregation. And when I say we were doing better, it's because we had no choice but to spend our black dollars at black businesses because the white businesses didn't want us. That's why me and my grandpa have gotten in it plenty of times because I told him, I said, I don't understand why y'all got your ass kicked to go give beg white people to go give them y'all money. I don't understand that. Like, why would you want to go eat at a restaurant that somebody that would want to lynch you in the back? That doesn't make sense to me. You know, and so what happened is the blacks went to the white businesses, but the return of the blacks leaving the black businesses, the white people didn't go to the black businesses. And so what ended up happening is that you have a mentality of people that have learned to go work for other people who generally happen to be white. So that's what happened. And so that's how the wealth gap that existed in this country because of slavery and because of the disadvantage to blacks and other minorities, that's how it got to get larger and larger over time, is because while white people were opening up in business and, you know, white people were starting Facebook and Google and things like that, we were learning how to go work for Facebook and work for Google. And when you there's a saying that I like to write in my notebook that I take my Niners. There's two sayings I say, one I won't get into. But the first one I put is, no man will ever let you be a king of his castle. And if you don't build your dreams, somebody else will pay you to build theirs. That's the two things that I go by. And that's why I get a lot of feedback when I tell my boys will be like, hey, bro, I need to go get a job. I'm like, nigga, why don't you go make a job? Like, why are you going to need somebody else to go get you a work? I was like, bro, go talk to your grandpa, your great grandpa. I guarantee you that they didn't go get. They just figured out how to make their own jobs, because you know people wouldn't hire us back in the day.
Do you think that higher crime rates in neighborhoods, white or black, affect the businesses? Because Because if people are afraid to go in your town,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to make much money.
Yeah,
because,
no. And
all these towns, right, they're not really making money from the people that live in their towns. I mean, they're making money
no.
from the locals. But
yeah,
a lot,
no, I,
most
I
of the money is coming from the
Detroit,
people passing
so.
Through.
Here's
you know, because
yeah.
cause that's
no,
the
I
constant flow.
Yeah, I have family that lives in Detroit, so I know. And I understand.
I want to make a quick point. Let me
go
ahead. Make a point, because I want to tie economics into this whole Kaepernick thing and what you guys are talking
yeah.
about too. So, all right, I'm gonna bring this back to Bill O'Reilly. All right, that goddamn prick. So glad he's gone. Right?
Oh, I hate him.
But anyway, so I hate Bill. All right, so Bill's gone. Now, here's the thing about what was interesting and telling to me about when the way Bill O'Reilly was fired. Bill was like Jesus at Fox. Like, Bill getting fired at Fox would be like the Christians being like, you know what, Jesus, like, we're going to have to let you go. You know, Bill was
yeah.
the face of Fox News. So
yeah.
the thing that was really interesting about that was the scandal that happened with him, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he's the white Bill Cosby. And, you know, all this stuff starts coming out, and people are outraged. Now, of course, Fox isn't even thinking about firing him. They don't care. The public is outraged. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that the, you know, conservatives that, you know, ingest Fox News every day, I don't think women's rights is their priority. I'm not saying they might not,
nope.
not care about women's rights, but it's not their priority. It's not the top of their list. So
well, women business owners, I think the Republicans care more about women business owners than Democrats
yeah.
do. I really believe
they make
that.
The money.
So
right.
I wouldn't necessarily say that.
Okay, but so
all the women I know that own restaurants and stuff, they end up being Republicans. I'm just saying it.
Gotcha. All right. Well, whatever. You just
here's
my point. So they don't care because the demographic's not going to stop watching Fox. When they cared was when the advertisers threatened to pull their money. So
mm-hmm.
the second that advertising
mm-hmm.
pulled their money, the economics really quickly changed Fox's morality. And that's what we're seeing with the NFL. And that's why I kind of blame the NFL demographic for what's going on with Kaepernick, because it's like we have players
mm-hmm.
who cheat, who've been caught cheating, who show zero respect for the game. We have rapists. We have convicted murderers. We have, you know, white beaters. But the black guy who peacefully protests, that's the thing the demographic can't tend to wrap their head around. That's what gets them all spun out. And I think that's really telling for the demographic.
And I think one of the things that is, to get into psychologically things, if you look at a lot of movies that portray, you know, that have blacks in them, there's not a lot of movies. If you look at black movies and even a lot of black history, what black history is taught, is it's pretty much y'all were slaves. White people suddenly all of a sudden figured that it was bad to treat y'all bad, and now y'all here. And I think sometimes why that the whole Kaepernick thing was shocking, I think that maybe subconsciously, or I don't necessarily know because I'm not white, you know, I don't identify myself as white, is that when a black man all of a sudden starts to say, hey, this shit sucks, somehow it gets twisted in and they think that because it's not slavery and we're not getting lynched from trees and, you know, we can vote and we can do that, we must be tripping. You know, or because, you know, Chicago has the highest black-on-black crime rate, that, oh, that's the problem. No, what the problem is that what Kaepernick was saying is, hey, when Ray Ray goes to jail, or when Ray Ray shoots Trevon, Ray Ray goes to jail. When Officer Bob shoots Ray Ray, Officer Bob gets paid leave. And
hey,
yeah.
Pete, we have
the,
about 1 minute left. Do you have any
yeah,
do you have any last points?
Yeah.
Pete?
So
yeah.
Well, you know that we go in the podcast. You know that you can go in the podcast. But yeah, I'll let y'all take the show. No, just go ahead and listen to Niner Faithful Radio. I don't usually do my whole Kaepernick thing. I've avoided in my show, but thanks for letting me get my opinions out there.
No problem. All right,
thanks for coming on. Yeah, I just
no
said
problem,
I think that what everyone said was correct. It was a fair, balanced thing. Personally, I think that if people were beating their wife at a football game, the people would probably not watch it. It's when it happens on the field, I think, that people are like, all right, I'm here to watch the game. You know what I'm saying? I'm not here to watch this.
I'm with you, man.
When you're doing it at the game, now the viewers are like getting pissed off. But when something happens in your personal life, it's easier for them to kind of just pretend it never happened. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Like, this is one of kind of been my big thing about was I didn't know originally how I would have felt being, you know, this, of course, biggest diehard Niner fan you could ever meet if, you know, the Niners kind of came out anti-Kaepernick about this whole thing. You know, and so that's one of the things that, you know, I'm glad. But I can understand that it's I'm not going to lie to you. It didn't bother me personally. I don't know why, but it didn't bother me that Ray McDonald beat his wife. And the reason it didn't bother me because Ray McDonald didn't beat my wife is because I have a boy who's a two-time felon, just got out of jail from doing his second strike. He went out to Vegas to go kick it with a couple of his friends and have a good time. He comes home. His wife takes the fridge door, beats herself with the fridge door, calls his PO. He gets violated. He's fighting his third strike right now. And the thing is I'm not saying that it's right to beat a woman, or I've always said if you're in a position where you're trying to punk a woman, you know what I'm saying, and you're trying to use the fact that you're a man and you're stronger and you're bigger to take advantage or something like that, that's when it becomes cowardly. But you know, lo and behold, as, you know, the facts have came out in this case, and it's funny because, you know, the Niners have kind of kept this hush and everything, is that it came out that his wife, a couple days before this alleged beating happened, had pulled a gun out on him. And apparently the reason why he ended up putting hands on her was because she threatened to go in the room and get the gun again. And, see, it's almost like with this whole domestic violence thing is that they tell you that he put hands on her, but they didn't tell you the fact that she threatened to go get a gun and kill him. Now, I don't know about y'all, and I'm not saying that it's right to beat a woman or something like that, but I don't know about y'all, but if you know, your woman, and, you know, your woman's really about that life, threatens to go get a gun, are y'all just about to stand there and call 911? I mean, I don't know about y'all. I mean, maybe, okay, you leave the room, whatever, but...
If there's a gun pointed in my face, I'm going to do whatever I have to. But if I'm in an abusive situation with anybody, I'm going to try to leave that situation. But not everybody has that option. Some people are tied down.
And
it's their house. They're stuck.
Being a group home kid, you see some crazy situations where people stay in situations where you're like, bruh, how could you even, like, live in that? You know, like, it's a lot of crazy, and so that's the thing that I've always kind of just been, it's kind of the way it is. It's almost like, for example, I remember I was watching this debate or something on YouTube, and this person tried to say testing rape kits was victim blaming, you know? And I said, no, like, it was that situation where I believe it was that player from Ohio State. It was some big football player like 10, 15 years ago, and he got falsely accused of rape, and it came out that his victim, you know, lied and everything, and he's gotten released from prison. And that's kind of the thing that I think we need to really be careful, because the big thing was Brock Turner, the swimmer from Stanford. That was a really big thing around here in Santa Clara County. Like, they really had protests about that at the jailhouse and everything like that. But I said, and that situation was a wrong situation. But I think what we need to be careful about in a society where we're trying to go to is almost where it becomes a power tool for women. And when I say that is, you know, I had to tell my baby mama, you know, one of the issues we had and we're no longer together is I said, I don't know if I trust you. Like, I was like, how do I know that we're not going to, you know, go out drinking one night? You're my baby mom. You know what I'm saying? We have three kids together. If you come and say, hey, come get some, I'm going to assume that it's all good. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to look at the fact that you're a drunk woman. I'm going to look at the fact that, you know, you've been my girlfriend for 10 years. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, I have a strike and a felony already, and I'm fighting a rape case. because my baby mama, you know, decided to be pissed off the next day. And that's some legitimate things that can happen. There's some crazy women out there. And so that's why I think sometimes we need to be careful. Like, I understand a football player, like the Ray Rice situation, that didn't look good, bro. I'm not going to lie. That was a bad situation. But I think that one thing that we definitely need to be careful of in this society and political correctness is being too, like, I understand women's rights, but being too womany rights and, like, the hypocriticalness of it. When it gets down to things like, I'm not saying that it's right to hit a woman, but you want me to look at you as equals, but then not acknowledge, I'm trying to think of a way to put this. I'm having trouble with how to put this. Basically, just being careful on how we handle situations going forward. I think it's almost sometimes that we're so quick to make people guilty before they're proven. You know, it's guilty until proven innocent.
Hey, listen, guys, we're going to
–
that was a good point, man. That was a good point. We got to bring this to a close. So, listen, we're going to keep doing this every Thursday at 9 o'clock. I expect everybody to call in. Thanks for the callers that called in. I appreciate that. Thanks for Niner Faithful of Niner Faithful Radio on giving his opinions and coming on the show and giving that view about Kaepernick and all on all the information that we got today. So, Pete, as always, man,
all right.
I'll talk to you, brother. I'm going to hit that outro music.
All right, bro. See you.
Thank you for listening to Political Bullshit. Be sure to visit the website, www.politicalbspodcast.com, and subscribe to the email list to stay up to date on Political Bullshit.